I continue, my dear ones, with the 13th chapter of Revelation, in which the description of the Antichrist is given, and the holy evangelist goes on with his description of him. He saw a beast rising up out of the sea, and the beast that I saw was like a leopard, and its feet were like a bear's, and its mouth like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard. Its feet were like a bear's, its mouth like a lion's, and the dragon gave to the beast his own power and his throne and great authority. It is truly a fearsome description, my dear ones, as the evangelist John tells it to us. The beast that the holy evangelist sees is an epitome of the four beasts rising up out of the sea, the great sea, the Mediterranean, which Daniel saw in a vision and which he describes for us in the 7th chapter of his book. Again, according to Daniel's vision, the first beast was a lioness and represented the Babylonian Empire. The second beast was a bear and represented the Medo-Persian dynasty, the empire. The third beast was a leopard and represented the Macedonian Greek Empire, Alexander the Great. The fourth beast is not named because it is strange, hard to describe, and monstrous, and it represents the Roman Empire. The fourth beast, as Daniel sees it, and, as I told you, describes for us in the 7th chapter of his book, had 10 horns. At one moment, Daniel sees a fearsome little horn sprout up among the 10, and at its appearance, 3 horns were uprooted, and Daniel notes, "And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. I beheld, and that horn made war with the saints, and prevailed against them, that is, eyes like human eyes," he says, "in that little horn, which had a mouth and spoke great things. I watched, and that horn made war with the saints, and it overcame them." And as the angel there interprets to Daniel that this horn is a king, he now notes in the text, according to the angel's interpretation, "He shall speak words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and shall think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until a time and times and half a time." This king, he says, this strange horn that sprouted up, this king will speak, will utter from his mouth blasphemous words against God. And the saints of God he will wear out, that is, he will crush them, reduce them to nothing, push them aside, drive them away. And this king will think to alter the nature of times, the nature and the laws of God, that is, to alter not only the moral law, the law given by revelation, but also the natural law. The natural law is, for example, that a mother does not kill her child. The natural law is, pay attention, the natural biological law. Yes, even in the feelings of animals. Have any of you ever seen a mother, a cat, a dog, whatever, drown her kitten in her little water bowl? It is a natural thing, this one, he says, will think to alter, to change both natural morality and the morality given by revelation. As, for example, homosexuality. Homosexuality, my dear ones, does not. We do not need to have a law given by revelation for it. The natural law, natural morality, dictates it to him, as also with the matter of adultery. My dear ones, truly, there are animals that stay with a single mate, the swallows, the stork, and so many others. With one mate they remain, the doves. And it shall be given into his hand. Authority will be given to him to do all these things for 3.5 years. As we can clearly see, this description given by Daniel coincides with the description the holy evangelist gives us, and it concerns the Antichrist. So Daniel 2 is clearly speaking about the Antichrist. That Daniel places the Antichrist in the fourth dynasty, the Roman, this is very rightly done. For the Roman emperors were persecutors of the Christians, and consequently, the Roman Empire acts as a power against God. But the description is not exhausted in the Roman Empire. It extends to the final Antichrist of the last days, of whom the Roman Empire is a type with its Caesarolatry. I underline, with its Caesarolatry. I will explain to you a little further on what this Caesarolatry is, and exactly how the type of the worship of the Antichrist will stand. But we must say, before we go on, that the mystery of iniquity, which is the coming of the Antichrist, is already at work in the Old Testament. We see it in Daniel. And this is so because in the Old Testament there was also at work the uncreated energy of the precious cross, which, as I have often told you, was at work. When the Israelites pass through the Red Sea, they pass by the uncreated energy and power of the precious cross, whose uncreated energy, of course, is without beginning. All the energies of God are without beginning, eternal, and naturally precede the historical cross. Just as he struck with his staff, first for the sea to be divided down the middle and then for the sea to come together again, Moses, by that movement of his staff, formed the sign of the Holy Cross, or in the wilderness with the serpents, when he lifted up the serpent upon a pole, and so on. But I want you to pay attention to these two mysteries, so that we may look at things in a kind of general overview of history and see how they work. These two mysteries, the mystery of piety and the mystery of iniquity, begin and are at work from the very first descendants of Adam. Before I go on, though, I would like to ground for you the fact that these mysteries of piety and of iniquity are already described in the New Testament. The mystery of piety is the faith, but the mystery of piety is also the church. Listen to how the Apostle Paul puts it in 1 Timothy 3-9, holding the mystery of the faith in a pure conscience. Holding the mystery of the faith, faith is not simply a phenomenon, and I believe in God. It is a mystery that is at work within the world through the uncreated energy of the Holy Cross. It would be unthinkable for people to believe in God if the power of the Holy Cross were not at work, both in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, across the whole breadth of history. Forgive me, across the whole length of history. And in the same first epistle to Timothy of the Apostle Paul, 3:16, he tells us, and confessedly, great is the mystery of piety. The mystery of piety. I underline it. What is the mystery of piety? Hear it in a marvelous conciseness. God was manifested in the flesh, was justified in the Spirit. God, who took flesh from the Holy Spirit, was justified by the works of Jesus Christ, by the miracles, and so on. He was seen by angels. For the first time in the history of the angels, God became visible in his becoming man. He was preached among the nations, the spread of Christianity and of the church throughout the whole world. He was believed on in the world, he became believed in the world. He was taken up in glory, and he departed again. He was manifested in the flesh, he was taken up in glory. He entered into history, he went out from history. This is the mystery of piety. If we had to take this marvelous summary of the Apostle Paul and make it even more of a summary, we would say that the mystery of piety is this: God was manifested in the flesh. That is, the becoming man of the Son of God. That is, Jesus Christ. This is the mystery of piety. That is what we believe, what we are, what we call Christianity. This is it. And this is now at work, from the time of Adam and Eve. Hear how it works. This is the mystery. Well, both mysteries. Within paradise, the devil comes to tempt the first formed ones. And at that very moment, God comes and says to the first formed ones, "You have sinned. You will be punished. Death will be brought in. But, from you, the woman, will come the one who will crush the head of the serpent. While this serpent will only wound his heel." That is, something very slight. This last part. What is it? The mystery of piety. That is, that the Son of God will become man. He will come from a woman from the most holy Theotokos. You see where the foundation of the becoming man was laid, within paradise. And bear in mind that from then on, because there were always on the earth righteous ones, already at work, in the mysteries of piety, which would be manifested for the first time on a great scale with the becoming man of the Son of God 2,000 years ago, and which will be manifested again with the second coming of Christ, which will also be the final and last coming of the Son of God within history, of the mystery of piety, of the fact that God was manifested in the flesh. On the other side, now we have the mystery of iniquity. At that very moment, the devil hears that a descendant of Eve will be the one who will crush his head. And he keeps his mind on it, and he watches, and he searches. I had told you in a past talk that he was searching the virgins to see who it would be that would be born. And the ever-virginity of the Theotokos, it escaped him, it slipped past him. But what did not escape him was the holiness of Jesus Christ, whose divinity, of course, he does not see. For God is invisible. He sees only the human nature, that is, his body and his soul, nothing else. And now we see the mystery of iniquity begins from paradise. I heard along its course, forgive me, the mystery of iniquity is again mentioned by Holy Scripture. The Apostle Paul tells us in 2 Thessalonians 2-7, "For the mystery of iniquity is already at work. It is already at work. It is already at work. It is happening. It exists." Let us look then at the sequence, beloved. The mystery of piety is carried on by Abel, and the mystery of iniquity is carried on by Cain, seeing that Abel would become the bearer. On account of his virtue, the bearer of the mystery of piety, the devil inspires Cain to murder him, and he murders Abel in Abel's place. Showing that the mystery of godliness had nearly been brought to nothing, Seth is born. But it is striking. Well, only two children. Adam and Eve had three children, and the proof that this is how things stand, and that Seth will carry on the line of the Messiah, is this. Although Adam and Eve made many children, boys and girls, it is Seth who is brought forward, and indeed he is brought forward as the replacement of Abel, and two generations begin. There is the generation of Seth, which is the simple one, devoted to God, and it lives under the will of God and the knowledge of the true God. By contrast, Cain, he begins a generation, apostate from God, emancipated, and it creates civilization. Do not forget that civilization is the offspring of the generation of Cain, and in the end it reaches such a sinful condition that God says, "The generation of Seth shall not be mingled with the generation of Cain. They shall be separate." So two starting points begin, two lines that must reach the last things of history, but they were mingled. The devil steps in to bring the work of salvation to nothing at every moment, and he brings about a mingling of the generations and all sin except for Noah. And God says, "My spirit shall not remain in them, because they are flesh," and he brings on the flood. Noah was saved with his three children, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Of the three children of Noah, the one who now carries the straight line from Seth is Shem. The first, God continually sets apart the descendants of Shem, and it reaches to Abraham. Abraham is a Semite. God takes Abraham and fashions a people, the Israelites. And this people, so that I don't go into too much detail or name still more milestones along the way, brings forth a single person, the Theotokos. The Theotokos, in the end, brought the Messiah into the world. Look at the whole journey of this direct line. On the other side, all the rest of the world now carries the line of the Antichrist, of the devil, of Satan, so that all the rest of the world might bring forth the Antichrist. The church is established upon the earth. But before the church is established, or rather, with the coming of Christ, we have the founding, or the manifestation, of the church within history, one milestone that sets out to frustrate the work of the Messiah from the time of the Messiah himself, is Judas. Judas is exactly what Cain was when he set out to murder Abel. Forgive me, the holy evangelist says it clearly that Satan entered into Judas so that he might betray the Lord, so that he might frustrate the Lord's work. Judas, then, is a spiritual descendant of Cain. After Cain, forgive me, after Judas, comes the great clash, the first historical clash between Christ and the devil upon the cross. The first great historical conflict, but there the devil lost the battle because Christ was shown to be righteous upon the cross. And he rose from the dead. The battle continues. Do you remember what we were saying last time? That the devil, the dragon, pursues the woman, the church, and she takes refuge in the wilderness. Yes, the church continues on her course. We are heading toward the last things. The eschata. We are journeying. We are journeying toward the last things. On two parallel courses. On the one side is Christ. On the other is the Antichrist, the instrument of the devil. Then comes Arius. The observation is not mine, but Father Justin Popovich's. He says that Arius comes to frustrate the work of Christ by proclaiming that Christ is not God, and thereby to frustrate the work of salvation within the church. To debase the church, but the church of the others overcomes him. And we go on, my dear friends, and it is painful to have to say it, and perhaps at first sight someone might react against this, but if he studies it a little, he will understand it. In the Christian West, and besides, Arius too was a priest, and indeed a most ascetic one, most ascetic, yet in truth most heretical. we come to the Christian West, which is represented by the popes of each age, by the Pope. The Christian West is nothing other than the secularization of the Church, the worldly mindset within the Church. So much so that Father Justin Popovich says the line runs, Judas, Arius, the Pope, the Antichrist. But so that you do not think this is only Father Justin saying it, we call upon St. Cosmas Aetolos. St. Cosmas Aetolos used to say that you should curse the Pope. Why? Christ told us not to curse any human being. Why does he say to curse the Pope? Not as a person, but as a symbol that represents a secularized, worldly church. With this understanding, you will curse. You see, you will curse the Pope. Because the adulteration that the West can bring upon Orthodoxy is fearful and deadly, a frustration of salvation. This battle rages furiously, my dear friends, between Western thought and Western experience on the one hand, and Eastern thought and Eastern experience on the other. A relentless struggle, a relentless war through all the ages. And in the end, the Antichrist will come, the devil will bring the Antichrist. And from the other side, along that other course I spoke of, Christ will come, at his second coming. And there this whole journey comes to an end. So you have seen where this struggle, this war, begins. From the paradise of the first created ones, Adam and Eve, all the way to the last things. All these things we have spoken of, my dear friends, most of them have already taken place. We are already at the end. We are already close to the Antichrist. Nothing remains but for the Antichrist alone to come. All the others have already come. So we have this historical journey of the mystery of piety and the historical journey of the mystery of iniquity. And the final historical clash will be at the last things. The last things of Christ. And the Antichrist appearing once more. The Apostle Paul says it clearly that Christ will consume the Antichrist. It will be the last, the definitive clash, and the victory of Christ. See how Daniel tells us this in his 7th chapter, which is very important, that what is chapter 13 in Revelation is chapter 7 in Daniel, until the Ancient of Days came. Until he came, you see, this is the second coming of Christ, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time arrived, and they took possession of the kingdom. The time has come, it is finished. The judgments have taken place, and the kingdom the saints have received. It is finished. The devil, the Antichrist, the false prophet, were cast into the lake of fire. This is the journey of Christ and Antichrist through history, before Christ and after Christ. Keep a diagram of it, always in your mind. Great authority. Then, so the invisible source of the authority and power of the Antichrist, who will always be a human being, as I have told you, will be the dragon, Satan. This is what the Apostle Paul writes, that the man of lawlessness will be set in motion by the working of Satan. 2 Thessalonians 3:9. It is also evident from the fact that the dragon appears with 10 horns, 7 heads, and 10 diadems, exactly like the beast, the Antichrist, with 10 horns, 7 heads, and 10 diadems. This identification of the dragon with the beast proves that the devil will have given his authority and his kingdom to the devil, forgive me, to the Antichrist. But I must tell you once more that this is not a case of the beast becoming man as Satan himself. No, but by the energy of Satan, the devil will not become man as God became man, but it will be by the energy of Satan, which means the devil will enter into a human being. And look at the cunning of the devil, how many times he moved to frustrate the church. 7 ecumenical councils and local synods were the effort to thwart the work of Satan, who was striving to thwart the work of the church. And the devil had inspired this idea that God did not become man, but rather entered into a man. Look, he entered into a man, the Theotokos, they say, is not the Theotokos, but the Christotokos, the bearer of Christ, the teaching that Saint Cyril of Alexandria confronted. They claimed that the All-Holy One did not give birth to God, that is, that the divine nature did not unite with human nature in the womb of the Theotokos. No, she gave birth to a man, Christotokos, and afterward God entered in and prevailed, dwelling within this man whom the Theotokos bore. This is dreadful. It is dreadful. The All-Holy One is not Christotokos. She is Theotokos, the God-bearer. So this very thing that the devil himself will do, he inspired Christians to maintain it in order to torpedo the church, to torpedo salvation. Whereas Christ, Jesus, truly becomes man and remains with his human nature in heaven, and will remain so unto the ages of ages. The devil does not become man, but he operates within a man who will be born of his mother and father naturally, and he will be by the energy of Satan. That is, this man will move according to the energy of Satan. There will be one person, and the devil another, and he another. Whereas in Jesus Christ, we do not have two persons. We have two natures, the human and the divine. But we have one person. One hypostasis. One person. Furthermore, Blessed Augustine calls the Antichrist the ape of Christ. The ape, as you know, imitates whatever it sees. And the Antichrist will make an effort to imitate everything that happened in the life of Christ. The first instance of imitation is this, that the devil became incarnate, yet he will not naturally appear as the devil, but it will be nothing more than a counterfeit imitation. Please remember this, that the Antichrist is the ape of Christ. Remember it, because we will need it shortly below, and the relationship that God has with Christ, such a relationship the devil has with the Antichrist. But I repeat, without the incarnation, only by an imitation, and indeed, a counterfeit one. From all this, then, we understand what we have been saying, that the precise interpretation of the Antichrist is difficult, very difficult. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been slain unto death, and his mortal wound was healed, and all the earth marveled after the beast. The holy evangelist continues, and tells us that one of the seven heads, one of the heads of the Antichrist, appeared as though it had been slaughtered, and therefore fallen downward, as if unto death. But this wound of death was healed, and when this wound was healed in one of the heads of the Antichrist, then the whole earth marveled at the event. What, then, does the holy evangelist want to tell us behind this detail in the image? We said earlier that the Antichrist is the ape of Christ. So then either he himself, or one of those who serve his counsels, his wishes, as I told you last time, one of his heads, and as St. Andrew of Caesarea says, one of his attendants, either he himself, then, pay attention, or one of his followers will be put to death, though by what means is unknown, and afterward, by satanic power, he will be brought back to life, and will stand up as a poor and distorted imitation, of course, of Jesus Christ, who was put to death and rose again. My beloved, the Antichrist will imitate the death and the resurrection of Christ. He will go so far as to imitate. I say again, the death and the resurrection of Christ. Yes. But with this difference, because what else does he want to do? He wants to imitate Christ, who rose the Lamb, who was slain and yet stands. But the difference is very important. Take note, the Lamb Jesus Christ, when he was put to death, was brought back to life forever, and indeed with a definitive victory over death, whereas the revival of the Antichrist will be temporary. Still more noteworthy is the verb that the holy evangelist uses, that the wound was healed. The wounds of Christ, after the nailing to the cross and after the resurrection, certainly remained. They remained. They are the ones the disciples and Thomas touched. They remained. And they remain and they will remain unto the ages as confirmation of the true resurrection and also of the true person of Jesus Christ, that he is the same one who was crucified and rose, as the holy evangelist tells us in the first chapter of the Apocalypse, where he says that they will see him whom they pierced. They shall look upon him whom they pierced and shall mourn. The tribes of the earth and the peoples and the tongues will lament, because they will see the one whom they have crucified through the ages, crucifying anew, as the Apostle Paul says, the Son of God by their sins and by their unbeliefs. But the Lord, when he appeared to his disciples, did not appear, my beloved, as one healed, exactly as someone comes out of a hospital, but is risen from the dead. So the distinction is clear. The wound of the Antichrist will be healed, but Christ truly rose. Consequently, this is a matter of deception and a resemblance between Christ and Antichrist by which many will be led astray, for the resemblance will be only apparent. What I am saying now is also evident from the following verses. The holy evangelist will tell us a little further down, though we will not reach it today, that this was a pseudo-miracle, a false miracle. The Apostle Paul tells us this too. that the devil will perform wonders and signs. And the greatest sign he will perform will be the healing of this wound of the head that was as though slain, an imitation of death and resurrection. The greatest wonder that the devil will perform, that the Antichrist will perform by the energy of the devil. But take note of one observation. The holy evangelist writes, as though slain unto death. As though slain, on the way toward death, as we say, my soul is ready for death. The word unto and the word toward show direction. They do not show a final state, but they show direction. I say, I am going toward the square. I am not at the square. When he says, unto death, he does not say death, but unto death, toward death, like someone who is preparing to die. So first of all, this is though unto death, and the as though slain, which means as though dead, wounded. This means, my beloved, that either the Antichrist or one of his lieutenants will appear as dead, yet not dead, and consequently, it will be a matter of deception. It will not be a true resurrection, but it will be a deception. The Lord gives warning, Matthew 24:24. There shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders. A wonder is the great miracle, the enormous miracle, so as to deceive, if possible, even the elect. Behold, I have told you beforehand. See, I give you warning. I have told you in advance, so that, if possible, even the elect would be led astray. And the Apostle Paul writes to us, 2 Thessalonians 2:9-11, whose that is the Antichrist. S. Coming is according to the energy of Satan, with all power and signs and lying wonders. Then here it is. Signs means miracles, and wonders means great miracles. But miracles of falsehood, that is, of deception. Do you see how they agree? What does the holy evangelist say? As though it had been slain unto death, he says. That, as though itself, shows the deception. And the apostle, Paul, continues. And lying wonders, and with every deception of unrighteousness in those who are perishing, for those who will be lost, because they did not receive the love of the truth they perished. These lost ones, those who turn their backs on the truth of Christ, that they might be saved, and for this, cause God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie. For this reason, God will permit them to have a spirit of delusion, to believe the lie, and to be lost. Magic and spiritualism, and spiritualism. How much they would have to tell us here, my beloved, how much they would have to tell us. The Antichrist is a great magician and a great spiritualist because magic and spiritualism are works and the craft of the devil. Do you hear this? Do you hear this? Let us never go to the doors of those who read cups, fortune tellers, in coffee grounds, magicians, and so on and so forth, to undo or to bind spells. For God's sake, we are serving the plans of the devil, but to give you a measure of this deception. Now, my beloved, as I say these things to you, you may be saying, but how can these things be? Have you ever been to a spiritualist dance? I have not gone, and I do not want to go, and I am forbidden to go, and you too are forbidden to go. The Word of God forbids it to us, and so do the canons of our church. You cannot, it says, partake at the tables of demons, and at the table of God, which is Holy Communion. Have you ever gone? Was just a figure of speech in what I said. Never go. But if we read what happens at these so-called spiritualist dances, signs and wonders, my beloved, signs and wonders take place. All of these reveal the falsehood and the deceit of Satan. So let me tell you a story, so that you may take the measure of this deception, of how the Antichrist will perform signs. And yet, it will all be a lie. People will say, but do you not see that he has risen? Do you not see that he is sunder before their very eyes? Yet it will be a lie. How can it be a lie? Listen then, I will tell you a story. Once on the holy mountain there was a monk, an ascetic, alone by himself, and he practiced his ascetic discipline, a very devout man. But it seems that he had acquired a little pride from his much ascetic discipline, and the devil wanted to tempt him, and indeed to destroy him. The devil appears as a delegation that had supposedly come from Constantinople, Vadahand. A large company, they were demons. They came to tell the ascetic that his virtue had reached as far as Constantinople, and that, since the throne had been left vacant, the people of Constantinople had come to take him in order to make him patriarch. Of course, he did not want this, but since this supposed delegation, who were demons, insisted greatly, he accepted, and he says, "Let the will of God be done, since the people of God insist so much, let me accept it." He got ready, took his belongings, and went down to the shore, where there was a large ship full of people waiting for him, an honorary escort, to receive him and take him to Constantinople. According to his custom, whenever he wanted to travel, he would make the sign of the cross. So when he stood before the quay, this man made the sign of the cross, and the moment he made the sign of the cross, everything before him vanished. Ships, too, and ceremonial escorts, all gone. An illusion of the devil. It was an illusion of the devil. And what was the devil after? To make him board the ship, that is, to fall into the sea and drown. These are what they call miracles, phantom miracles, which people will see and take to be real. There is yet another miracle, in quotation marks. This one in Crete, but it is recounted to us by Sozomen and by Socrates the historian. However, I don't have the time to recount it to you. What I have told you is enough for you to understand, to take the measure of this deception. So that you may understand what the holy evangelist writes here, and all the earth marveled after the beast. Newspapers will write of it. It will be proclaimed at the top of the scale that you have a miracle, or many miracles, on the part of the Antichrist. And the world will marvel. But one sees here a shallowness in these people, in the unbelievers. These unbelievers, these who pride themselves on their rationalism and on their unbelief, will become victims of that very unbelief of theirs. As I read to you earlier from the Apostle Paul Sivene, by the permission of God, precisely on account of this, I repeat, their unbelief. And they will marvel at the supposed miracle of this false dead resurrection, as St. Andrew of Caesarea tells us. Listen to it. The miracle that appears in delusion in the Antichrist has its reference to the devil who works in him. The miracle will have its reference to the devil. The devil will perform the miracles. For through him the dragon shall be worshipped. Through that one, the Antichrist, the devil will be worshipped. This, after the beast, which the holy evangelist notes for us, expresses the ease with which the unbelievers and his admirers will become his devotees and followers. And something more, all the earth will have marveled at him. Let me read you the verse again, and the whole earth marveled after the beast. What does this mean? It means that television, here too, will have its part to play. And it will be in the service of the Antichrist. And is not television, even today, already in the service of the Antichrist? My beloved, I will say it to you one more time myself. Many others have said it to you, and I will say it as well. Be careful with television. If you do not have a television, do not bring one in. If you do have one, send it out of your house, all the more. So if you have children, the raising of your children will become very hard if you do not watch this point. In any case, television is the handmaid of the Antichrist. As you can see, we are living in the last days, in Antichrist times. We live this every single day, and they worship the dragon which gave authority to the beast, and they worship the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" And so people will worship the devil, who will have given his authority to the Antichrist, and they will worship the beast, and they will say, "Who is like the beast, like the Antichrist? Who can wage war and defeat the beast?" This is how the people of the earth will speak. Pay attention to what lies behind these simple-sounding words. Hidden within them is the whole meaning of how history behaves. Pay attention. I told you this, the last time as well. The result of this marvel and this amazement, which will seize all the inhabitants of the earth, springing from the healing and the revival of the head that was, as we said, slain unto death, will be this worshipful honor given to the dragon, who is the devil, and to the beast, who is the Antichrist. I will say it once more, a worshipful honor, an honor of worship, will be rendered, the honor of adoration itself. As you know, this worship is rendered to God alone, so worshipful honor means the giving of divine honor. They will deify the Antichrist, and they will deify the devil as well. In this way, the ancient desire of the devil will be fulfilled to the very limit, his old passion, his pride, that he should be worshipped. Of course, Every idolatrous religion is a worship of Satan, something that has happened and goes on happening through the ages. But then, in the last things, it will be a matter of direct and unmixed Satan worship. This is the very phenomenon we see in our own days. My beloved, one says it with horror, and indeed it happens in this civilized and Christian America, groups of people who worship Satan directly, calling upon his name as God. In the old idolatry, people worship Satan without suspecting it, unawares. But now it is no longer unawares. It is done stubbornly, deliberately. A man will tell you outright, "I worship Satan." The same thing happens in Freemasonry as well, and especially in its higher degrees of initiation, where Satan is worshipped with passion as Baphomet, under the name Baphomet. It is a statue of a god with goat's feet and horns. It has horns, goat's feet, and sits cross-legged. That is the form of his statue. But why is the devil shown with goat's feet and horns? Because, by divine allowance, whenever people saw Satan, they saw him in this form. They saw him like a goat. For this reason, God permitted it to be so. And for this reason, we meet this same form in very many of the deities of all peoples and all ages. Because among all peoples, God allowed the devil to appear like a goat. That is why a goat is worshipped, or deities under various names with the face of a goat. But then, in the last things, the devil will be worshipped, as I told you, directly and immediately, both the Antichrist and the devil, since every authority will have been given to the Antichrist by Satan. Now the type, the foreshadowing, of the worship of the Antichrist is the Caesarolatry I spoke of. Pay attention earlier, in connection with the fourth beast of Daniel, which is the Roman Empire, where the emperors were worshipped. So the type of this worship of the Antichrist is the Caesarolatry of all the ages, from the time of Nebuchadnezzar who demanded to be worshipped, and from the three young men who refused, and who are a type of the faithful of the last things, faithful of every age and of the last things, down to the Roman emperors and beyond them, all the way to the last things. Caesarolatry, my beloved, even within Christian lands today, sadly even in our own century, is a reality. The totalitarian regimes, by every means, have pursued this Caesarolatry. But about this Caesarolatry we will speak, God willing, this coming Sunday.